in Washington State. So next week, our show is going to feature Bob Distel from Borealis and Woolwich Arrow and Pub. And I'm very much looking forward to that, because he's going to talk about his work in integrating local food and a significant percentage of local food into his menu. And at some point in the next few weeks, we're going to have the second half of our interview with Mike Driscoll as we further talk about local beer. So, again, thank you very much for spending the last half hour with me, and I hope you've heard some interesting information regarding hops, and you'd be inspired, if you're in the Guelph area, to go to the Woolly, go to Borealis, and try some of the beers that feature Mike Driscoll's hops, and hopefully you'll have a greater appreciation for these beers that have more of their components made in Ontario. So this is Walter Garrison, the host of Locavore on CFRU 93.3 FM.
You're listening to CFRU FM 93.3 from University of Guelph.
Women of the world, stand up and fight. Now is the time to claim our rights. Color's not an issue in this fight. Doesn't matter if you're black or white. This song is for liberty. This song is so we can be free. This song.
If you've made a pledge to CFRU during our recent Raise Your Voice fund drive, first of all, thank you. Now it's time to make sure your pledge finds its way to CFRU. Here's a surprise. Cash works. Just drop by your pledge at the station and pick up your gift at the same time. Or write a check to CFRU FM. You can drop it by or mail it to us at CFRU, UC Level 2, University of Guelph, Guelph, Ontario, N1G2W1. And then there's PayPal. Just visit our website at cfru.ca and choose the PayPal option. If you're out of town, we'll mail your gift to you. Regardless of which you choose, thank you for supporting Campus Community Radio, CFRU FM.
Invited. Tune in every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. here on CFRU FM 93.3 for a brand new show called Tu Casa y Mi Casa. During this Spanish and English show, we'll chat about our Latin American identities and explore a medley of Latin music. With involvement of special guests, we'll also cover topics related to making Canada our home. Hasta pronto! Join us every Friday evening as we build bridges and give a warm welcome to the weekend.
Action Read Community Literacy Center is looking for new volunteer tutors. 4 out of 10 people aged 16 to 65 struggle with reading, writing, math, and other essential skills. Many adults here in Guelph are looking for support in reading job postings, calculating budgets, applying for benefits, and participating in community life. Action Read tutors are trained to help adults work from their current skills to reach their goals in work, learning, and life. If you can spare a couple of hours a week for the next year, you can make a big difference working one-on-one with an adult learner. Action Read has a terrific suite of tools and resources and a wealth of experience to help new tutors develop their skills teaching math, reading, writing, and computer basics. For more information or to volunteer, call 519-836-2759. That's 519-836-2759, or visit us online at actionread.com.
listening to CFRU Radio. Radio Griffin. What's a Griffin?
The rights of tens of thousands of migrants working as living caregivers in Ontario are being neglected. As the name suggests, caregivers give care to those in need of assistance. But who's caring for the rights and needs of migrants working as living caregivers? Migrante Ontario is a non-profit organization advocating for the rights and well-being of migrants working as living caregivers. The passing of Bill C-50 has made it easier for people working in Canadian migrant worker programs to work with temporary status, but harder to gain permanent residency. Working with temporary status in Canada leaves the rights of migrant workers far less protected. However, most migrants who come to Canada are led to believe that they have the chance to become Canadian citizens. Interested in getting involved with the Guelph contingent of Migrante Ontario? Connect with us at migrante.ontario@gmail.com. That's migrante.ontario@gmail.com.
Sound Magic, here every Saturday afternoon on CFRU. Seriously, music.
Good morning. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM here in Guelph. And it is Thursday, November 11th. Speaking of Remembrance Day, Sarah isn't actually able to make it in today, but we do have a repeat broadcast from her show from August 19th of this year.
Looking for
listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. My name is Sarah. I'm your host, and I'm excited about today's show. I had the pleasure last Sunday of meeting up at Sonic Cafe on Cecil Street in Toronto. Really nice coffee. Hadn't had coffee that good in a long time, and I met with Jesse and Charlie Huskin, who Charlie is the founder of the St. The Rules Dale Library, and Jesse is his junior partner and also his son. And the St. The Rules Dale Library is an independent bookstore that's been around in Toronto since 1979 and recently closed their doors because of a, you know, basically because of gentrification. But we're going to get into more details about that. And who knows, maybe it will open again or maybe it will show up in another form. Its last home was on 86 Nassau Street in Kensington Market. And yeah, it was in two other locations in Toronto before that. But I'm going to just let Charlie sort of tell the story from the beginning.
My name is Charlie Huskin, and I'm the founder of the St. The Rose Dale Library. In 1979, I was working at a place called The Bookseller, which was a small three-location family kind of chain. And I was made the buyer late winter, early spring. But I really didn't have the kind of freedom that I wanted to organize events and also to bring in the kind of stock that I wanted. But I did have some fun. The poet Victor Coleman gave me Allen Ginsberg's phone number, and I knew he was coming to town to do a reading at Convocation Hall. So I arranged for him to do a signing, and that was pretty exciting for a 29-year-old guy. And I also organized a dual book launch with an unlikely combination, Kathy Acker and Paul Quarrington. And again, you know, that was fun because I admired their work, even though I knew it was so different from each other and also would have a completely different readership. But by summer's end, the family had decided to do away with that particular location, which was right on Yonge Street and the most interesting, I thought, of the three stores. And they hired a general manager who, quite frankly, was a bozo. And he was bringing in remainders that had been, you know, circulating for years. But he didn't know the book trade that well, so it looked all exciting to him, whereas it looked really stale to me. So I was helping unload this, you know, cube van full of remainders of stuff that was kind of boring. And I kept taking washroom breaks over and over to get away from him because he was into positive thinking. So he was playing the theme from Star Wars really loud to try to get the staff excited. And I thought, I'm working for an idiot. And this whole place may be owned by an asshole. So I thought, if I'm going to work for an asshole, it might as well be this asshole. And I'm, for the radio audience, I'm pointing at myself. So I phoned Jesse's mom and I said, I'm going to do a crazy thing. I'm going to give notice today. And she was fully supportive of that and gave notice and then started to make plans to open a bookstore because I knew of a likely location. There was a bargain remainder store on Queen next to a record store. And it wasn't a great fit with the kind of books that he was offering and the record store, but I knew that we could probably do some exciting stuff, you know, linking rock and roll and literature. So I did that. I signed the lease with actually it was the Mafia. So I came up with 1 month's rent, and then they looked at me and they said, this isn't enough. And I thought, what do they mean? Because this is all my savings. And they said, we have to have last month's rent. So I immediately went into debt. So I've been in debt, you know, since 1979 to keep this thing going. And you don't pay mafioso late. So I knew that that was actually maybe going to work for my benefit, that I would always be kind of on the hustle. But it was actually a beautiful golden opportunity because mainstream bookstores weren't stocking things like Patti Smith, had never heard of Jim Carroll, thought that Jim Morrison was dead in all senses. John Lennon was a big shrug, like, oh, he's just a pop guy. And so we brought in poetry books by writers that I knew and admired, as well as the more approachable pop stuff that I referred to as gateway writers. So that somebody who read, say, Patti Smith, we could say, well, try reading Frank O'Hara, or try reading some of the Beats or whatever. But then the Beats and people like Hunter S. Thompson, they generated their own legends. One didn't have to work too hard to make that leap. So we were next to the record store for about a year and a half and got a better location across the street. So that was 81. And then we moved in 86 to the corner of Church Wellesley because Queen East wasn't developing the way Queen West was. So we were looking for a change. And there we were, two straight guys running a bookstore in the middle of the new gay epicenter. And we were wondering how that was going to work out, and we were embraced with open arms and stayed there for 22 years. And it was a happy arrangement until, you know, really gentrification kind of started kicking in all over the city, but I think especially at the corner of Church Wellesley. We knew that things were really turning odd when the president of the BIA, the Business Improvement Association, Dennis O'Connor, he ran a gallery, an art gallery, and their mandate was to show gay and lesbian art. So one would think, well, they're suited for Church Wellesley, and he's the head of the Business Improvement Association. Well, he moved his art gallery to Parliament and Queen during his tenure as the BIA president. And it's funny because when we decided to move out of the neighborhood, people were saying, why? We said, well, don't ask us, talk to Dennis. You know, like he's, you know, one of the main people providing culture to the neighborhood. Talk to him or talk to both of us, but don't just, you know, isolate us by saying, you know, that our move is, you know, overly significant or something. But then we moved to 86 Nassau, and that's become an unhappy story. We were locked out by the bailiffs the weekend of June 19, and we're still trying to negotiate with the landlady, but that's quite difficult. We have a friendly lawyer working for us. The bailiffs are actually on side, but yeah, it's become a kind of unhappy story about a relationship, business relationship gone completely sour. So here we are today.
Here we are. And that's June, we're talking just like 2 months ago.
2 months ago.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
You are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. And I'm airing an interview I did about the St. The Rosedale Library and the history of that bookstore in Toronto. Interviewing, you heard Charlie Huskin's voice, and you will also hear his junior partner Jesse's voice in the next part of the interview. That part of the interview you just heard, Charlie talked a little bit about how the bookstore got started, thinking about the role of events and speaking series and thinking about the role of providing really good choices of books in a satisfying way. So Charlie opened a bookstore in 1979, instantly went into debt, which is also kind of the song of the independent bookstores. And we're going to go to the next part of the interview now.
The bookstore is sort of at a standstill right now.
Yeah, I'd say so. But, you know, the heart of the bookstore is still beating.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're still, you know, and that's true not just for us. I'm now working with Mark Lastman and Judy Wolf on a cultural event series called This Is Not a Reading Series. And those people used to own and operate Page's Bookstore. And the thing is, if you get it into your system, your blood, you know, it's hard to give up book selling because for us it's more than retailing. It's in some ways literary curating.
Well, and there's also the side of being a reader, which is this, you know, the city is lacks a lot of opportunities for readers in terms of bookstores now.
Yeah.
So regardless of book selling, you can approach it that way and wonder.
Yeah. Talk about Vanessa Place.
You know, where do you buy? You know, where do you buy the books that you love in the city? There are lots of great bookstores, but not good stores for art books. Not good stores for modern literary classics. Not good stores for zines, consignment items. No good stores for philosophy or cultural theory. So there's a void in the city for readers. So
yeah, and it's a little embarrassing. For example, the people at the Toronto New School of Writing, they've invited Vanessa Place and Joanne Kiger to do workshops. And you can maybe find as a bargain books by Joanne Kiger because she was published by Penguin, you know, one of the major houses, and they did this stupid instant remaindering kind of thing where they just, you know, suddenly glut the market with these copies of her books with magic marker slashes on them. But her big collection is done by a very small press out of Maine in the States, and available through a distributor that no one in the city deals with. We did. So here she is. She's coming to town. Sadly, Joanne Kiger is a poet of note, but in terms of like publicity in Toronto, she'll often be referred to as Gary Snyder's ex. Gary Snyder, the author of Turtle Island, which won a Pulitzer. But, you know, she's the peer of all that generation of writers. And, you know, a woman of note, a poet of note. And then you can't find copies of that big collection by her.
Yeah.
Same with Vanessa Place. She's coming to town. She's the founder of a press called Les Figues.
I mean, she's an author who's written two books, which have never really been accessible in Toronto, with the exception of our store and Pages, but which are nonetheless very important and really enthusiastically championed on the internet, on people's blogs, in bookstores in the U.S. And so, I mean, part of my whole interest in jumping aboard the store was in seeing this massive void, having difficulty even just buying things that I was interested in and that I could talk about with people who traveled more frequently or who used to work in the U.S. or, you know, specifically seeing people's blogs and discussion on the internet and seeing none of these books available. And so it just seemed like a kind of like there is really a deep void in Toronto that, small businesses are having trouble filling because of the landscape. And certainly the Arts Councils have never had any interest in distribution or anything as, you know, as, you know, abject and practical as distribution is really off their radar. They're really only interested in things that might contribute to a really grandiose idea of Canadian cultural life.
But what is that? I'm kind of confused because, I mean, of course, I mean, it's not that confusing, but Toronto tangibly, visibly has a lot of money and a lot of seemingly interest in the arts. And we have the Toronto Women's Bookstore, we have Glad Day Books, we have Pages, and we have the St. Thérèse Library, all, like, struggling to stay not completely in debt, you know? I'm a bit baffled by where the priorities are. I just don't really understand.
Well, I think the easy answer to your question, or the way I would answer it, is, you know, the emphasis on spectacle is the only, certainly the only way that finance capital, which is what Toronto is all about, can feel like it's spent its money right. If they were dumping money into, you know, small literary festivals, there would be no spectacle. I mean, there wouldn't be, you know, there certainly wouldn't be an entertainment value of the kind of really base level that is expected. And even from art these days, the expectations are that there'll be a spectacle that will, you know, enter the news media and maybe turn up somewhere, you know, draw some kind of cultural attention to a city, whereas the kind of, like, you know, it wouldn't be, you know, as exciting to create Toronto as a great city for small press poetry, you know, or a great city for... These things don't really draw people in a kind of, like... They don't draw in tourists in the way that spectacles do. So the financial money will never go in that direction. It just never will. It would require visionary individuals with wealth, as opposed to institutions who have a different mandate. I mean, with that, having said that, there's the Scream in High Park, which presumably does, you know, draw some attention to Toronto. And so maybe I'm being too cynical, but that would be my answer.
Plus, I don't know. I also think the problem in Toronto is that the culture here is young in a way. And Toronto never really experienced modernism the way that even, say, cities like Chicago, or even some of the, say, cities in Latin America experienced. In Toronto, there was a Victorian, Edwardian sensibility. You know, no poem was a poem unless it was rhyming couplets, or, you know, or maybe popular in the way that Cremation of Sam McGee is popular. Everything else was off the radar. Anybody who wanted to write modernist poetry would get out of Canada and hang out in New York or Paris or wherever. I mean, you know, people were saying, you know, like, you know, already in the 70s, like, you know, this thing about Toronto is a world-class city. I don't know. I came here in 71, 72, and I found Toronto comfortable. That's why I settled here, not because it was a world-class city. I mean, the first time I went to the Art Gallery of Ontario, I cried. It was so pathetic. It was.
What did you see?
Not much. You know, Dutch painting from, you know, who cares when, you know?
If only. It wasn't even Dutch painting. It was pre-Columbus.
Yeah. Well, now the Art Gallery of Ontario costs $20.
I know. See, that's a sign of its provincialism as well.
Yeah.
You know, 20 bucks to see what, you know?
Yeah. Listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM. In the background, one of my favorite bands that I forgot about and then remembered about,
Penguin Cafe Orchestra found them in the vinyl library at CFRU recently,